Hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Outside the Panels, where we're taking a big, deep, old breath and diving outside with a very special guest. It is I, Chaz Simons, here with my friend and frequent co-host, well, I guess only, really, only two co-hosts, Poet Air.
Hello! I'm very excited about today's episode and our special guest, and of course, my brother from another mother, our maestro and editor, Sin Aesthetic, also known as Jack. Jack, are you there?
Yeah, hello. How you guys doing today?
Doing good. We're joined with a very special guest. We're joined today. Ryan Ellsworth is here because we're talking about his comic book, North Bend. Very excited to have you, bud.
Hey, yo. Thanks for having me on the podcast. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, of course, we all love your book. This is our season finale of Publisher Spotlight on Scout. North Bend's probably my favorite Scout book. I love a lot of Scout books, but North Bend's really a journey that just intrigued me. It has like espionage kind of elements. It has
sci-fi, you know, in there a little bit. Like the future is like just a little bit further out, but still just as like shocking and jarring as 2020 has been, in a way. Like, it feels like a natural progression of the year 2020 if it continued a few more years.
It feels like it's like 5 years in the future, which is something I also really love about the book. And the fact that the new MK Ultra is set up through Datura, which is kind of the main component of the book. And what happens to the book is how Datura kind of affects everyone, including our lead character, Brendan, which the book hops around a lot. When we first meet Brendan Cruz, he's maybe faking it, maybe not, but seems to not remember anything and is in prison and getting talked to by a CIA handler that he once worked for. And we kind of just go on the journey from there.
It opens up with his buddy in the CIA who's pretending to be his lawyer and visiting him in prison. So that's another little mystery of why he's pretending to be.
Why Hal's pretending to be his lawyer.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like all the extra elements of subterfuge there, almost. Like, I'm already uncertain about what Brendan's experiencing because I'm just meeting him. And I'm made aware of what's going on through his lawyer. But then that reveal of like, no, we work together, kind of. Like, it really set off a good lead for me to start questioning sort of the things that I was being presented.
Well, yeah, at first they were like, he was like, sorry about everything that happened. And I was like, wait, what happened over at the law firm? And then I was like, oh, wait a second.
Yeah, sorry for that.
Oh, no, it's good. It was a fun little bit of confusion, kind of added to the magic.
No, I'm just saying, yeah, like, it'd be funny if that's what they're actually apologizing about with something that happened to them.
I'm sorry.
She really beefed the coffee order the other morning. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that won't happen again. She's been let go.
Oh, wow.
The best part about North Bend for me is that it is a puzzle, like piecing everything together and all the shifting timelines. I'm somewhat convinced that, I mean, you know more than us because you're writing the second arc right now, but I feel like Brendan might be acting like he's been affected by Datura, but isn't. But I don't know.
That's definitely a good excuse, right? Like, if you want to behave in a way that could only be, like, justified by...
And to protect your family from the CIA and yourself, yeah.
It's not my fault, yeah. You know, like... It's definitely a good excuse if you, and like, I don't know how much of it is actually that. I mean, you could probably interpret it like that. But it's interesting to me, like, how you guys were saying in the first scene, how he's kind of pretending like he doesn't know who Hal is. And it's maybe out of fear, like, because he knows too much or he's worried about his family or what might happen to him.
He definitely seems a little loopy there. I go out and say that he's pretty fried.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really seen... Well, you guys haven't really seen any of the effects yet, because that's basically like the the cliffhanger at the end of number five, right?
Yeah. The celebration toast. Yeah.
So before we dive too much farther in, I wanted to know, Ryan, what about Datura made you think like this is the plant that I'm going to use the like basis of it on? Because there's a lot of cool psychotropic substances that I'm sure if somebody was high, they'd be more willing to give you the information. But reading up on just regular Datura, it didn't sound like generally the trips are pleasant. Was that part of the choice there? Or?
Yeah, that was one of the choices was like Datura plants are known for giving you like a very unpleasant trip, and most people would like never recreationally take it. And it's like, right.
I'm going to stop you guys right there. So it grows everywhere in the Bay Area. You can actually just pick it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was maybe 21 and young and dumb and dried out some Datura with some friends and smoked a bowl of it. And I ended up laying in the house. I had a house with like five roommates and I ended up laying in the couch in our garage. I have no idea about how long it was, but it felt like an hour. But I thought I was, because it's a delirium.
Right.
I thought that my roommates were coming in and out and talking to me. And like I was having full conversations. And then it wore off. And I came back into the house and I was like, hey, you guys kept on coming in there and talking to me. And they were like, we didn't go in there at all. You were in there by yourself. And that was my Datura experience. I laid on a couch, thought I talked to people. And didn't talk to anyone. I was just
sitting
there.
Was it not that unpleasant for you?
I didn't have any full-blown hallucinations, no. But I definitely thought I was talking to people that were not there.
I'd call that a full-blown
hallucination. I'm also not going
to lie.
It sounds like you were giving out information pretty freely on your trip. Anybody could have just walked in there and been like, tell me what I want to know. And you would have been like, yeah, let me tell you this. I'll tell you this stuff.
That's probably very true. Yeah. In the idea and birth of North Bend, was it Datura first, or did you already want to write a story that it was North Bend, like involving DEA, CIA, mind control experiments, and then you researched Datura, or was it you found out about Datura and then kind of birthed the project?
Yeah, it was kind of like just part of the research process of what would be like a realistic substance to use as like a mind control drug. When I had the idea, it was basically kind of like an MKUltra thing.
Yeah.
And like, what if it happened again in the near future? What if the government was trying to see if they could control its own population into doing what they wanted? So in the first MKUltra experiments, they used like LSD, but they also used like scopolamine, and which I believe comes from like the devil's trumpet. It's like a Datura, one of the members of that.
It's like it's the same plant species, but even stronger, yeah. Right?
I used to have those guys growing up.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, devil's trumpet.
Yeah, down in Southern California.
Yeah, like in Mexico and stuff. There's stories of people like harvesting the seed pods and using it to like make scopolamine, which is
that's what they like blow in people's faces and have them do what happens to Sam, right? Give them all their money and
but supposedly there's stories of being able to like kind of put people into this almost zombie like state where they'll just kind of do whatever you say. And so the CIA had experimented with that during MKUltra to see if it could work. And so that seemed like something that I could, LSD didn't seem that exciting to me to do as much as like the Datura plants were more of kind of an unknown, and kind of, they seemed like the trip seems like a lot worse compared to LSD.
Yeah.
Yeah. LSD, in my opinion, is much more therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think it's kind of a therapeutic drug. Not getting too much into it, but I feel like, especially in smaller doses, I feel like eventually in maybe 10 or 20 years, that'll be legalized as a depression drug, kind of like how mushrooms are legalized now in Colorado for anxiety and depression.
Right.
Because that story about the guy, you know, throwing himself off the roof on LSD was actually, he got thrown off the roof by the CIA. And there's that documentary / movie show about it on Netflix. I can't recall the name of it, but it has Peter Sarsgaard playing the character. Wormwood. Where they ended up giving his family some small amount of money when the truth was found out. I remember that. I feel like it was like 50 grand they gave his family after they admitted they killed their family member. They're like, here's $50,000. Sorry.
Yeah, they basically admitted that they did it.
They were doing all kinds of crazy stuff with the LSD trials. They were trying to like go into different dimensions and like,
yeah, man, they were all high on LSD, of course.
And all sorts of crazy stuff.
That's what I would be thinking too. But
they were using sensory deprivation tanks in LSD to try to travel to different dimensions. Yeah, what's the Earth Lab? Is that what it was called, those experiments? I'm trying.
I did like that this Datura that you bring up in North Bend, that they can't test for it. Like, it probably won't show up on a drug test like a normal sort of substance, which is almost perfect for governmental use too if they're trying to like sneak it out into the population. You don't want somebody being able to like just say like, oh yeah, you're on it, so we can't trust you anymore, right? Like, nah, you're just being weird today. So it seems like a smart choice.
If you could explain, like kind of gets out of the, kind of removes that option of being able to explain why people are behaving a certain way if they're not showing, if that's not showing up in their blood or whatever.
Yeah, and it also gives some credibility, I think, to Brandon's either play acting or actual been dosed, sort of. Like, there's no confirmed way for them to say, like, you quit faking. We know it's not in your system. Which is kind of cool.
It's, seems like it's some sort of extract to what they're using in the book.
Yeah, that's what they were doing in the labs, like Sam and Annie. And I like what I love about North Bend too is the momentum, how it basically all the puzzle pieces start to fall together. We start with that scene with Brendan, find out he's an undercover DEA agent, and then we're right in the lab with Sam and Annie, and then Sam makes a horrible mistake of getting the extract into his bloodstream, which I would have just locked myself in a room. I don't know if he had the thinking capability to do that, but.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, if it was me, I would probably try to do the same thing he did, which was to call someone that you trust and say, like, take me to the hospital because I don't know what's going to happen to me. Because this is like, to them, this is like an exotic.
It kind of reminds me of back to the LSD, it kind of reminds me of like the Albert Hoffman Bicycle Day story where he like got it, he broke a vial all over his hands.
Yeah, that's like, kind of what inspired that scene was, that was like the discovery of LSD, right, where it was kind of accidental.
Yeah. He was trying to look for Alzheimer's, he was trying to find something to treat Alzheimer's. And that was LSD 25. It was the 25th version of the compound, and it broke on his hand.
And then he rode his bike. Yeah. And
then he went for a bike
ride. Whoa.
And I don't know how he rode his bike. If anyone has experimented with LSD,
probably started riding and then it set in. once you're going, right? Like that's how you learn to ride a bike.
Well, that's how the story goes.
April 19th, 4/19, the day before 4/20.
Maybe he, thank goodness he didn't run into anybody on the way who was like, hey, man, give me some extra money. You got a lot in there. Hand me a couple extra bills.
Boy, he might have obliged.
Freddy.
Or just stripped naked and rolled around in the street.
Okay, so I guess that brings us back to where we were.
So yeah, Sam in the beginning gets the extract in his blood. He calls his girlfriend Annie, like to get help because he knows he made a mistake. And on the street, he is confronted by a man who convinces him to give him all their savings, which is like $95,000.
He leaves him with $25.
And he leaves him he does leave him with $25.
That was very nice to be honest. It was like the five he wanted and the 20 he got in return, kind of like. The one good turn deserves another. You gave me $85,000. I'll leave you with the $25,000. You would have spotted me.
I'm glad you guys noticed that. That was kind of a little funny thing to slip in that I'm not sure anyone really noticed.
Yeah, I didn't catch that one. That's great.
No, I thought it was great because then later I thought, well, Freddie's a real jerk. You know what I mean? Taking advantage of this poor man just trying to get to the hospital. And then I realized, like, well, he's kind of on the skids and on drugs, and things don't look too hot for people if they're not doing, you know, the suburbs life.
I like the call.
Yeah, that was nice. I like it a little bit. Give me a little bit of sympathy.
I like the callback with when Freddy's severely dosed on Datura, and when Brendan is asking him to get into the shower, he sees Sam in the lab uniform suit asking him to get in the shower.
Oh, yeah.
So he's kind of tripping out and seeing the guy he ripped off while he's... I love how it goes from cockroach people to...
Or there was some sort of like crustacean lobster people, or was it cockroaches?
They're lobster people, I think. I think you're right.
Yeah. lobster people are pretty awesome.
So. Yeah. When they're... Yeah, he sees Brendan and Annie as lobsters when they're kind of medically examining him.
Yeah.
Sees Leon as that golden retriever.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man. He does seem like a puppy dog right now, though.
Instead of handcuffed, he's wearing a leash.
Yeah.
All the characters are so well written. Even Leon, I kind of like, even though he's not a likable character, but He just gets in over his head and deeper, which I feel like will probably expand in the further issues that come out. But I guess
he definitely continues to fuck up. He's that's what kind of character he is. And
is it just me, or did Lamar Olivier reminds me kind of a more extreme Barack Obama? I mean, I love Barack Obama, but just kind of when Barack Obama was, you know, rising up in, you know, 2007, 2006, it was kind of like they had those big meetings and stuff like that, but they're a lot more peaceful. But people were also very like against it in his like first run before he became president. I don't know what inspired you on the character of Lamar Olivier and the Crusaders. And also just for the listeners in the book, we're at war with Russia, and in the United States, there is a group called the Crusaders who are basically almost starting a civil war, and they are led by a man named Lamar Olivier, or is that the right pronunciation, or is it?
Yeah, he's French, so I believe that's how I say it anyway.
Yeah, Lamar Olivier, who's kind of their leader, and he's always in secret places, and he's having all these rallies that the DEA and the CIA are raiding. And that's kind of how Brendan gets involved. Because when we first meet Brendan, he is a DEA agent, and he comes across the Datura on the streets from Andrew, who I know is going to come back in the story because he's mentioned in the first page again, but Andrew is a drug dealer and he smokes a joint of the Datura and basically, you know, does not do well. And that kind of leads Brendan into the eyes of the CIA and decide to offer him to join this project in North Bend to kind of experiment on this town with this compound they've made, which is kind of the main story synopsis or what gets everything going in the plot. There's a lot more that happens, but that's where Brendan gets involved and where he gets his swing pad. Is North Bend a real place near Seattle?
Yeah, North Bend is it's kind of northeast of Seattle, I think. It's actually where, have you seen Twin Peaks?
Yeah, okay, so me and Jack's friend Celeste is from there because she's from where they filmed Twin Peaks. Is that North Bend?
Yeah, that's where the show is set at. And I think like Nintendo has a headquarters there as well.
That's where me and Jack's friend Celeste is from, because she used to always talk about how she was from where they filmed Twin Peaks. And when she was a kid, she'd remember them always like that diner, closing the diner and filming there.
Yeah, and I just love the title North Bend because, first I like just grew up in the area. So it's kind of, I'm one of the guys that writes about places that he grew up near or in, yeah. But also like it's just really kind of like a, if you ever go there, it's beautiful, but also kind of surreal and creepy. And I just like the setting of that kind of place. And then the title itself, just I like the wordplay of it. Kind of has like a connotation of like mind bend, you know, like North Bend. So
yeah,
definitely. It's weird to me that the Pacific Northwest seems like such a place of like beauty in my mind, of like nature and like, you know, just I'm picturing like trees and rain and like overcast sky, like just a real nice, but also in the back of my mind is like, that's where you go to get murdered too. You're going to go out to those trees and enjoy this, but like there's danger out here still. Don't forget about it.
Go out to Murder Mountain.
Yeah, I think just the constant overcast and rain and fog to kind of stuff is kind of oppressive feeling and kind of can give you that vibe to me anyway. Yeah.
Especially coming from a desert here where I'm at. It's a total tonal change. So at times I'm wowed by it, but then I'm like, I don't know what's in here. I don't know what's lurking around this corner. I'm in over my head. Yeah, like the characters.
I was born and raised in the Bay Area, then lived for a long time where Jack is from, which is, I think, the most beautiful place in California. It's called Nevada County. It's where Grass Valley and Nevada City are. And I used to live in a small town there with the population's like 300 people called North San Juan. I think that's where Jack is currently still living, right, Jack?
Yeah, that's where I'm staying right now.
It is gorgeous. Like, it is the most mountain-esque, beautiful place I've ever been to probably in my life. I miss it every day. The desert is a big change for me. But I met my wife here, and I don't know if you guys can hear Baby Willow because I'm holding her right now and trying to calm her down. I had a baby a week and a day ago. Hello, Willow. Say hi to everyone. She wants to eat again. She caught... I know you have children, Ryan. Did your babies want to eat 24/7 when they were born? Because she wants to eat pretty much.
Yeah, when they're born, when they're born, all they want to do is eat and sleep. But
yeah, she's sucking my arm right now, and I feel bad because Mama, my wife, has been feeding baby.
Yeah, I feel like she's that's all babies know.
She's sucking my arm again.
Right?
I'm sorry.
I've been asleep and sometimes awake in the womb, and all I've been fed through the tube like the Matrix, and now I'm out, and I just want to go back to what I know. Just let me sleep and let me eat.
Well, it's like she's throwing up the formula now. We got her on the Enfamil, and she was eating it at first, but now she'll like eat it and spit it out. But today I understood why, because I tasted Enfamil to make sure it wasn't too hot. I licked it and I almost immediately threw up. So I understand why my child is spitting it up, because I do not think it tastes as good as the real thing. My wife is over there smiling in the kitchen because she's because I'm basically saying her breast milk tastes sweet better than the Enfamil, which is true. But Datura, which means...
So anyway, where were we?
we were talking about where you live and where I lived also. So up there, there is this woman named Starlight Compost. She runs a natural school of learning. I believe that's the name of it. It is a commune.
I love the last name Compost, by the way. I keep thinking that it's a business.
Yeah, I don't know how she picked that one.
Starlight Compost sounds like a recycling that you would go and buy so that you could make your garden grow better. Not that person that makes them.
No, yeah, when I first moved here and heard that there was a person named Starlight Compost, I was like, what the fuck? Where am I? But yeah, she's a total nut.
She is known to strip naked.
Makes all her clothes out of she skins roadkill.
Golly, that's such a harsh verb. Skins.
What?
Jesus Christ.
And you said she wears it as clothing?
Yeah, she skins roadkill and makes clothing out of it, and that's all she wears is clothing.
Just like a scarf out of like a skunk or something. Skin roadkill.
I would go hat for a skunk.
No, like kind of more like
but
skirts,
maybe like
and
a
tops.
I don't know what animals live up there, but like a deer or something.
Yeah, like deers and
that's crazy.
I don't know what else. What else does live out here?
So Ryan, I have another question for you, Ryan, if you don't mind.
What's that?
Oh, I was gonna say when you're thinking about doing like a MK Ultra happen today, did you put yourself in sort of the headspace of what it must have been like to be in the room where they were pitching MK Ultra like originally, to kind of give you the vibe of like how they would come up with, right? Because I always hear about think tanks and stuff where they just throw out like, here's our situation. Russia's moved to the east and they're pressing on this. How would we respond so that we know if it ever happens? Kind of vibe. So for your MK Ultra, were you thinking like, this is what they were thinking about back then. How do I translate that to today?
Yeah, like, are you thinking of that first meeting where they have an issue at the end of issue one where they're kind of trying to pitch Brendan on it?
Yeah, like, this is what we're doing here. It looks like it'll be pretty interesting, right? And then he kind of just goes along with it, but
yeah, it's kind of entertaining to think of how that meeting might go when, like, someone's trying to pitch you the idea of mind control. Like, people might be like, are you serious right now? Like, you think that could actually, like, happen?
I feel like that kind of crazy, like, evil scientist wingnut shit probably happens more than you'd think at the CIA, though.
Yeah, I mean,
that's pretty scary.
Yeah, there's a book called Poisoner in Chief where the guy that kind of ran MKUltra, Sidney Gottlieb, it's about him, the book, and MKUltra is just like one chapter of the book, so he was involved in some crazy shit, and so yeah, MKUltra is just one of the things.
Now, do you think Gottlieb tried it recreationally at first and was like, this might be a good thing to use for...
Oh, I bet it did. I bet, like, a lot of the CIA guys tried it. I know that, and this happens in issue 3, like, when they're giving Brendan the tour of the division where they work, and there's, like, a dude lying on the floor under his desk.
Just eyes
who
wide.
Who dosed him?
Yeah, like, they would actually kind of, like, slip it into each other's drinks and, like, surprise dose each other at the CIA and stuff. So
that's how married pranksters do, too.
There are a couple of jokesters over there.
So I think it's interesting how our main character is working for the CIA, and his wife is, like, a radical journalist who's, like, leaking information from... or who's getting leaked information from the scientists and publishing it, and she doesn't know that he's involved in the project?
Not at all, and she actually gives him information that helps him in his own investigation because she doesn't know they're related.
But we do
see
her at one point in one of the flash forwards. Maybe that's present day, and then this is flashback. But she's there, right?
At Sam Nanny's house.
Is she in one of the court? I know that he said he only sees her in the courtrooms.
Oh. Uh-huh. Who am I thinking of that he's talking to?
He's
like meets her outside and he's all surprised that she's there. And then she's like, why? And he's like, well, you never came to visit or did
that,
anything.
I think.
Yeah, that's.
I think that might be his wife.
Yeah. I thought that was her. I didn't think it was Annie.
Yeah, that's Jamie, his wife.
I think Annie might be my favorite character of the book, which I hope we get a lot more of her in arc two.
Oh, okay. I really like that every character in this book feels like they are at the top of their world and are very much way in over their heads. Like, I feel like Brendan is moving up to the position that he wants. He wanted to be in the CIA. Now he's working adjacent to the CIA. He's not super in love. He's going along with what they're doing, but he's not 100%. Like, he's doing it because it's the mission and it's for the good, kind of. Like, it feels like he's on under his own form of mind control in a way, but that indoctrination maybe. And then Annie's there. She's created the plant. She's sort of not sure about it even. They talk at the beginning about, like, well, what if we don't have a good sample? Then we just they don't know. They're not scientists, but they know somebody else is doing. They're just a big cog in a small cog in a big machine. Leon, super in over his head. I feel like he got way, like, he was at the top of his world. I know a guy that's a captain for Lamar. I'm here. I'm the dude. I'm the man. And then all of a sudden is now, like, not, I mean, he still is very useful and doing stuff, but in no way is he, like, kind of the man that I saw before. And even the neighbor, one of my favorite little side characters, the nosy neighbor.
the nosy neighbor. Something bad is going to happen to that neighbor.
I hope not. He's just being a normal guy who's a little bit paranoid.
I mean, the CIA was worried about him from the first moment he knocked on Brendan's door, and now he's even involved himself more in calling the police over to the house, which was quickly handled by Brendan. And then I love the conversation with the cops, calling that everyone's a Peter, that they move up, and the farther you move up the chain, the dumber you are. I'm just thinking he's some dumb cop because Leon's running down the street in handcuffs.
On
my read for the reason Brendan kind of joins this whole experiment is because of his time in the war with Russia. I feel like he's really worried about the violence the Crusader riots are bringing. And I think that he wants to do this to help control that, to kind of control the violence in the United States and in his hometown area. Because it seems like he was very affected by the war, but also even very empathetic in the war, because we're told in court that he even helped save one of the Russians in the war and helped protect his life as well. So I think, at least on my read, I think that his PTSD that he probably isn't dealing with properly is his reason for joining this experiment, so that he can kind of help lessen the violence that's going on with all these Crusader riots. And because he wants to work at the CIA. But I think if there was not the Crusader riots happening, he would not have been as down with the mind control program.
I think he would have been, though. I feel where you're coming from, for sure. But for me, I almost think that it's, in a way, like I was saying before, he's been indoctrinated in this system of authority, right? Whether it's through the military service, through his time at the DEA, his desire to move up into the CIA to take a bigger role. Whenever those things are dangled before him, it seems as though he's been told, like, you got to move up higher, you got to go stronger, you got to finish the case, kind of thing. Which is, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm generalizing too much sometimes, the military, like, this is, you got to do what you're told. You got to go where you're going. We're going to tell you A, B, C. Don't worry about D through Z, kind of.
Yeah, I think you're onto something with the indoctrination, because, this happens a little bit in issue 6, which is the first new one coming out, but we see some, like, we go more into Brendan's, like, army time, and that there's definitely, like, an indoctrination period where when you join the army and you're in boot camp, and they kind of, like, they strip you of your individuality, they teach you to all be the same, you wear the same thing, you follow the same routine, they shave your head, and they basically teach you to run towards the bullets, right? Like, they have to kind of change your, they have to remove your natural survival instincts and make you like a kind of just like a machine that can follow orders no matter if you disagree with them. And so that's definitely,
yeah, like what they're trying to do with the deterrent.
Yeah, and there's echoes of, I mean, I don't want to say echo, it sounds dumb, but it's definitely like a similar type thing happening with the current day MKUltra stuff, right? It's like a lot of similarities between the two kind of.
Yeah, between being indoctrinated into a military machine in the military-industrial complex and, yeah, mind control itself, just stripping away individuality and, you know, making, stop thinking for yourself and thinking kind of as a hive mind.
Exactly.
Which, to go back to that uncertainty too, that you instilled right from the beginning, where I wasn't sure if he was faking or being real after we found out his lawyer was actually his boss, his law boss, and not his law lawyer.
It's the one that likes him, right? Is it how that comes in?
But because of that, I almost had that same sort of like questioning when we got to that courtroom scene and we learn a little bit of his backstory where he's totally innocent and everything's cool. Look at this man. He's got a family. Like, that's the argument a lawyer would make for a man who's guilty too. So in my mind, when they tried to show all of his like empathetic qualities, which are present because he does take care of Darlene, and he, you know what I mean? Like, he's not outwardly antagonistically violent. But I didn't necessarily trust that, like, oh yeah, I bet in the war he did. I'm hoping that he did do some nice stuff, but it's war. If he did bad stuff, it's bad, but it's war. So you did a good job.
One of my favorite scenes is that, and is that ending scene of issue 4 to protect Darlene when he takes Leon and just superdoses him and records that message and leaves it next to him while he just lays there and walks away. And he has that smirk on his face. Mm-hmm. Whereas that's, as Chaz was saying earlier, that's definitely that top of the world feeling. At that moment, Brendan thinks he has got everything handled and nothing bad's coming his way at all.
Yeah, just I could kind of imagine the power you might feel at that point where someone's under your complete control and you're kind of like programming their brain almost.
It's got to be a weird feeling. I left right after that when he walks outside and his car is all tagged up with like, it's all tagged up with people saying like, fuck cops, you know, whatever. And he gets in and his car, his autopilot's not working. He like smashes the screen and blows up his car. He's just like, wow, talk about work stress. Like, definitely feeling that.
Yeah, he kind of has the immediate introspection of what he's just done at the same time where it's kind of difficult for him to process, I think. And blowing your car up is one way to process it.
Yeah. Every Thursday for me.
Yeah. Five is such a like almost epilogue to the first arc, because really 4 for me is just, we've mentioned Annie before and she's a botanist and she works for the CIA. She's also Sam's girlfriend, and Sam is the one that was robbed by Freddy while under the influence of the Datura. And now Freddy's been superdosed and they have to bring Annie in and she gets to work with Brendan. And I really like to see, I mean, we already see Annie as a strong character just with her taking care of Sam and their family. And then her quick-wittedness to just jumping right in with Brendan and being kind of like, I really like their partnership. So, I mean, anytime they're, I felt like the whole time they were together and everything with Leon, that issue 4 just moves so fast and it's so fun. It's just kind of a thrill ride, and it has that perfect ending with Brendan walking out with that smirk on his face. Probably my favorite issue of all 5. I love all of them, but that one is just a complete roller coaster ride of, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. How do I handle all of this? One guy's ODing on the floor. Another guy's running out in handcuffs in the middle of the street. I have to pull a prostitute into my house with my nosy neighbor.
Yeah, that one was, I was kind of worried that one would be one of the more boring ones almost, because it all takes, you say it's like one of the most thrilling ones, but it all takes place in the safe house, basically, like the entire thing. So I was kind of worried about people getting kind of bored of the location staying the same all the time, but sounds like it works pretty well.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of action there, even though it's all kind of in that bubble.
It's contained, though, so it feels more like frantic almost at times. Like, because we're not cutting away to a place further outside, we're not in a bigger environment. It almost feels like the tighter setting heightens it a lot.
Yeah, it kind of feels like the walls are closing in or something, I guess.
Yeah. Are they going to make it in time? Is the neighbor going to report their weird sex orgy? Which is what I'm sure he thought it was when a man in handcuffs comes running out and a woman is dragged back inside. Like,
yeah, it just confirms the suspicion.
He mentions earlier.
What does he think? And then he's also peeking out the window when the cops bring back Leon and then see him deliver a handcuffed man back to the house.
Imagine what sort of fan fiction he's writing about what's going on over there.
Dude, I would love if somebody wrote some nosy neighbor fan fiction.
Fanfic. His letters to Penthouse. I never thought it would happen to me, but my neighbor has a sex cult. I went to drop off cookies.
The police are involved.
His walls. They might not have been real police, but they sure looked, and those handcuffs looked tight and hot. I'm not saying it's coming, Ryan, but it might be on the. I'm kicking around some nosy neighbor fanfic.
Please do it, man. I would.
All right, Chaz, try and cover up your fan fiction writing.
Yeah. Let me just put my notebook away and type this into an email.
As we move to issue 5, it seems like such an epilogue and good end to that first arc. Those last two pages where they're at the club where Lamar Olivier is going to be at, and they're all there, and like the boom, 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 that total techno music playing in the background while you're seeing all the characters doing what they're doing, all leading to that celebration toast where Brendan then gets dosed with Datura, and that's how we end the first arc with him. Maybe we don't see him drink it. We see the celebration toast, and that's where it ends.
He's about to drink it.
That's where he ends up in the situation he's in the beginning of the series, so to speak. That's like the beginning of the end for him.
Except
for the end of the beginning.
There's still the scene where he's covered in blood and murdered Andrew, the drug dealer from the beginning, which is what he's in prison for.
Yeah, we still don't know like how all that happened, but I assume it has to do with him being dosed up.
Yeah, there's a central mystery there of why Brandon's in prison, and we haven't really explained that yet, but we know it has to do with him being covered in blood from that quick little
snippet. It was a murder of Andrew too, right? Am I wrong on that? Or do they also say he murdered Andrew?
That was in jail.
That was when Andrew attacked him. You're right.
People get busted.
And Hal's pissed at him because he's like, dude, you're already here for murder and you just killed another guy. Like, you're making this difficult for me.
Yeah.
I do remember this scene now where he shanks Andrew in jail when Andrew confronts him.
That was a fun scene. I enjoyed that one.
He almost got killed. I'd shank him too.
He was defending himself. It was. I wonder in prison how they handle that. Like if you are trying to get shanked and then you shank someone to death in self-defense, do they consider that a self-defense or is that just another murder added onto your charges?
I think it's self-defense until it's to death. Like part. I'm not familiar with prison, like the inside of one, other than the concept and having watched a lot of Lockup. But I would imagine if I tried to shank somebody and they twisted my arm around and stabbed me myself in my gut, I'm gonna leave right then. My attempt failed. that's the self-defense, is the initial stab. When you keep going, if you self-defense somebody to death, I don't think that you can, like, there's a line somewhere between self-defense and, like, I guess I feel like it, you probably did.
It also has to do with the heat of the moment. What it looks like, or like what they could prove, because it could just look like homie like tried to cut his neck to as self-defense while he was getting stabbed to death. You know, it's,
right?
They have to like prove which way it goes.
Twisting mystery. Who shanks
the shanker?
No, I'm very excited to hear that you're already hard at work on the next arc, because I want to know where this one's going. I was wondering if I could ask you a quick question about how you build your stories. Is that all right?
That is, I will allow it, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Do you normally have, like, the beginning, like, the main genesis of the idea, and then you just go, like, A, B, C? Or do you kind of have a A and a C and work your way into the middle, B?
Yeah, so I think what I did was, I just, when I first had the idea, you kind of have, like, these first kind of scenes that come to you that you think it might be about, and you kind of try to figure out, like, the main points. And what I did was I figured out, like, coming from the characters, like, what's Brendan's weakness? What does he, like, need to accomplish to fix the weakness? And does he do it? And kind of from there, figuring out, like, how it would end, if he's able to do it or not. And what, when I come up with the ending, it's easier for me to write because I know what I'm going towards, and I can kind of take the scenic route or go, you can kind of be more creative with it without worrying that you're going to lose what you were writing about, you know?
Yeah, I'm always worried I'm going to get in the weeds if I start writing without like a end goal in mind. Usually I'm going to start, and then I'm going to come up with something that's cool, and I'm going to go off that way, and then I'm going to forget what I started with. So I feel like having some goal in mind is definitely seems like the way to go.
I know that me and Chaz are both aspiring writers who like to write. My issue is with, I can usually get a beginning, middle, and end and main like arc of story. I usually have trouble with, I don't know if you do too, is filling in the gaps, like the small stuff that needs to happen so you don't just have a short, you know, 3-issue series, because stuff needs to happen in between each arc or each point between, you know, story point one, story point two, and then the final act.
Yeah, for me, it's like I kind of try to go through what, if you focus on the character and what they want, there's kind of like natural steps that a person will take to achieve what they want, and you can kind of follow that kind of like structure to make your own story. That's what I do, is I like, so, you know, all stories are about somebody wants something, right? So you have to give the person desire, obviously, and usually someone has a weakness, and they the weakness causes them to fail to get the desire, and they keep trying to get their desire, and they fail more and more. And then they start acting immorally or doing something wrong to try to, you know, because when you can't achieve your goal, a lot of people like resort to doing something bad in order to get it instead.
Yeah.
Like, whatever I can do to make the thing I want happen, I'm going to start doing. And then at that point, you know, they may or may not get it. They may learn something about themselves, like they have a revelation about themselves, right? Like, I need to become a different person in order to get what I want. Like, I was doing this wrong the whole time, you know? And then,
that's good to know. I feel like maybe concentrating, because that's the thing, I concentrate more on the story before the characters, so maybe at least in my own writing, concentrating on character work first before story, because that's my big issue with writing, is I'll have a great story and then kind of not as strong of characters. So maybe, at least with my own, that's some good advice, to work on the characters first and then kind of blend them into the story and kind of the purpose of it.
Yeah, it kind of makes it more organic feeling, when sometimes it feels like a plot is forced on characters and you start making them do what you need them to do, and it doesn't feel like it's something the character would do.
Yeah.
That can be a problem.
I was kind of surprised when the character in this book was so ready to go and shoot Datura gas into a crowd full of people, kind of with a smile on his face. You know, I thought he'd have some more hesitation there.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the beginning of the story, it's not something he would do, but I tried to make it like a gradual thing to where it might be believable that at that point he might do it.
I mean, I guess it's believable. It was just like surprising. It was like you could see the power trip happening there.
I feel like that has to do also with his experiences in the war. Well, just to kind of crowd control, basically. I mean, because, you know, the gas is going to basically subdue them and will lessen the violence that could occur. I mean, that was just my take on it. I mean, not with the grin on his face. That's definitely a character build. But I feel like he definitely has trauma from the war. And I'm glad to hear that we're going to get Brendan wartime in the second arc.
Yep. There will be one of my favorite issues is goes deep into Brendan's wartime and kind of explains why he is the way he is. It's a pretty fun, the trippiest issue, and also
you got me with the trippiest issue right there, which I'm gonna be excited for that, learn more about Brendan and it's trippy. And I'm only gonna guess maybe he's on Datura and flashing back to things that have happened to him in the past that kind of explain his character, but that's just a guess.
That's a good guess. That's a pretty good guess.
Yeah. Question. So, because the art team changed on this, is that because it was originally a Kickstarter and then it was picked up by Scout? Or did Dee and Ryan Carey just weren't able to do it because they were busy?
So, like, Rob and Dee, there were some pretty big gaps in between actually creating issue 1 and 2 with, like you said, the Kickstarter and stuff. And I tend to pick people that like go on and get really popular, and it can be hard to schedule time, you know, like when they're working on bigger projects and stuff.
Sorry, I called him Ryan. Rob Carey. Yeah, Dee's really popular now. She's on all sorts of stuff.
Yep. So he's gone on to color a lot of big two comics, and
yeah,
he's doing some really good, some nice work now. Rob's done Alien and whatnot, so
yeah, I've tagged Dezoid a lot recently on a lot of different books he's been coloring. I think he's been doing a lot of Image books too, because I don't read too much big two. I know Chaz does, but he would know more about that coloring work. But is Pablo DeBonis, if I'm pronouncing his name right, is he returning for the second half of the series?
Pablo, yep, he will. We have the same team finishing the next five.
Awesome.
Yep, it'll all.
I actually love the style of that art. So so is issue 10 going to be it? Is that going to be the complete story?
It definitely has. It's not like a setup for more, really. It's a pretty closed ending. And like, I don't know if I'll ever come back to it. I love the world and stuff, but there might be some more room for like some nosy neighbor stories or what have you.
Neighbor fanfic is not actually so much of a fanfic. It's
gonna be, if your next project is about the nosy neighbor in his life, I'm in. I mean, you sold your first copy here already.
It's going to explain why he knows so much about the hidden camera sex houses.
I'm going to call it South Bend.
Oh.
Yeah, there's definitely a backstory with this guy.
Across the street.
He's doing some projecting, maybe.
So do you have any other exciting projects coming up?
Like, nothing really in the works. I've just been focusing on finishing North Bend. I have a couple other ideas for, like, one is kind of like another crime thing set in, like, the South about a guy that wins the lottery.
Love it.
That already sounds fantastic. When you hear all these lottery stories that you hear that really happen, that sounds great.
Yeah, the pitch for that is basically, like, you think he's the luckiest guy on earth, but really his this is probably the worst thing that's ever happened to him. His life's about to get fucked.
Love it.
Kind of reminds me of there was like a Lost story arc, right, with Hurley
getting
the lottery and having his life all fucked.
Oh yeah, Hurley with the numbers.
The numbers.
Yeah, the whole his obsession with the numbers like drove his life into the ground.
Yeah.
I have a Lost tattoo. I on my chest. I have the what station was it?
The one Dharma.
That Yeah, but I have the Orchid station tattooed on my chest. Which the Orchid station is the one that moves the island in time and space. The one that Ben and Locke find. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys remember it's any cool of tattoo. Lost.
I don't know. There's a lot of it. It was a long time ago. I remember a little bit.
I was obsessed with that show when it was on. I watched it religiously to the end. And I even liked the ending. I cried. The funniest moment ever was... It was about eight of us got together for a party to watch the last episode. And my friend's girlfriend came... back from, she was a hairstylist, so she came back from an appointment late at night to walking into six men, grown men, on the couch, bawling, crying, and she was immediately like, oh my god, what happened? And my friend Trevor was just like, it's the last episode of Lost, because she just comes in and sees all six men blubbering and crying hysterically at the end of Lost.
I'm like, oh, it was the last episode of Lost. It was so bad. Sorry.
No, I don't know, man. When Jack's dad shows him the coffin and makes him realize he's dead, from that moment on, I'm waterworks. And just them all meeting each other again in the afterlife and having to remember that they know each other. It worked for me. I know it did not work for many people, but I thought it worked. I don't think they really knew where the story was going, which was the problem with the project.
Yeah, you could tell they kind of lost it.
Well, I think they had a great idea, as we mentioned before on the previous episode of Abrams Projects. Great ideas. They should probably have great endings when they have the ideas, which seems to be a recurring bad robot thing. Or fantastic idea, don't really know how to end it.
We were just talking about how Westworld does that. Well, we talked about that, I think, a little bit on the other episode, but about it on the other episode got me to watch it in the last season that came out.
The last season of Westworld, I don't know if you watched Westworld, Ryan, but the first two seasons were incredible. That third season, like the first three episodes, I was like, okay, I'm getting into this. It's okay. By episode, I think it was only eight episodes, but episode four... everything falls apart. I don't know. When there's like weird Matrix fights happening between characters that make no sense.
I like Dolores a lot better as like a confused and scared farmer's daughter robot than as Trinity.
And then ending's
every
just
time
Fight
I
Club.
See Kid Cudi come on screen, it breaks the immersion for me. I'm like, when's he going to start rapping?
And Ed Harris, who's so good in the first two seasons, just seems to not give a shit. I don't know if that's because he knows the season's not good, but his performance from the first two into the third season is so insane how jarring the change is, because he's like dead serious, doing a great job to acting like he's like swimming in the river of ham, as Blankchuk would say on their podcast. Like, he is hamming it up to like no... he's just hamming it up. I don't know why, but it just seems like he does not care. I don't know if it was because he was not down with the season, but that's more Jonathan Nolan and his wife Lisa Joy, I think, than J.J. Abrams. Westworld would have been great if it was just two seasons, and they just signed on for two more, so we'll see where it goes. God, really?
Yeah. Where is it going to go from here? That doesn't make any sense.
Okay, Fight but Club, anyway. Aaron Paul world. That's
so back to where we were. We were talking about future projects, and we were talking about the idea of this guy in the South wins the lottery, and it's the worst thing that ever happened to him.
Yeah, it's kind of like another crime. It'll be a shorter thing, probably, than North Bend, because it's just so hard for me to write like a 10 issue thing. It's hard to finish, I think. I don't know if I'd want to do another one of those again anytime soon, but
6 issues is good too. Like 5 or 6 issues is good. They're almost my favorite stories because they're contained. They're like a book. You can always read them, and they end usually where they should naturally end.
Yeah, this one would be like a smaller in scope for sure than North Bend too, so I think it'd be like a little bit easier read. And then so I just have a few ideas for that. I don't know if that'll even be the next one.
I hope so, because I'm excited now. You got me sold. If that's what you work on after you finish North Bend, I think all three of us will definitely be buying it. I don't even want to know the title. I want to know the title when it comes out and just be like, that's that book he was talking about.
Yeah, I'll save the title. I know what the title is, but I'll save it for the surprise reveal.
Yeah.
Will it probably be Scout too, or are you shopping at other indie publishers as well?
That's a good question. I haven't really thought about it too much. Like, I could definitely pitch it to Scout. I could try my luck and see if like
Vault or Image.
Yeah, if anyone else might be interested, just to, you know, it's always good to see what your options are.
Yeah. That's what I like about indie creators, is you can play in all the pools. The Scout, the Vault, the Image.
Yeah.
Oops.
Kind of made
the Booms. I almost forgot. Yeah,
don't forget
the
Booms. Those guys.
Don't forget Boom and Dark Horse. Boom, yeah, they're great too.
Yeah, it'd be cool to... That'd be really cool to... Be part of those guys too.
And Boom will get you connected to Disney, because most people don't know this, but Boom is actually owned by Disney.
Yeah, they have like a minority stake in it through their acquisition of 20th Century Fox.
Century Fox, yeah, because 20th Century Fox bought a large stake in Boom, and then 20th Century Fox got sold to Disney, which most people don't know about, which is interesting. Boom is releasing a lot of great stuff though.
Now, Alien is a Disney princess.
The Alien Queen is a Disney princess. Not one of those regular drones.
No, the Alien drone is the princess because their mom's the queen. Yeah.
I loathe the ratio variants that Marvel's releasing with all their characters fighting aliens. I'm just not a fan of that. Some of my friends who are just variant obsessed. I like the indie variants just because they're usually weird and surreal. I like to hang them on my wall. Literally, in our living room wall, the Tula Lote North Bend cover, which will be the cover of the graphic novel too, is just sitting there next to anime posters. I stare at it every day. It's such a great cover.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I can't get enough of that cover, man.
Which one is that?
Jack, I don't know if you've seen it.
I'll look it up. What is it?
North Bend number 1, Tula Lote did the art. It'll be Brendan peeking out blinds. And Is it Jamie next to him, or is that supposed to be Annie? There's a female.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, they're looking out the window, and something's coming.
Yeah, I think it sets up the whole story.
I'll cut this out later. But what's a tweaker's favorite sexual position?
What?
It's a doggy style, so they could both peek out the blinds.
Man.
But anyway,
the peeking out the blinds is also a it's foreshadowing to Nosy Neighbor peeking out the blinds.
It is. I do really enjoy that cover though. I like the colors a lot. It's like blue shirt against the red backdrop.
Yeah, it was my avatar for a while. I love it. I love how well she draws Brendan's beard. Like, that looks like a real beard. As a bearded man myself, that she draws a beard well. She's Chaz's favorite artist. Chaz, I'm going to ask you now on here, how much did you pay for that birthday drawing she did for you? Does your girlfriend listen to the podcast?
Yeah.
But I can cut it out if you want me to.
No, that's fine. It was an amount. Just say.
Okay, was it less or more than $400?
It was with shipping a little more.
Okay, that's not that bad. I was gonna guess $650.
It's 12 by 16, so it's sizable too. It's pretty sharp.
We recently tried to get an artist who we covered the series to commission a drawing of me, Jack, and Chaz, and he's an indie artist. So we thought it was going to be a little bit cheaper, but it ended up, because they're all, you might know them, it's all run by like one guy who runs all these artist commissions. It's Inky Fingers, I think is his name. But we thought it was going to be cheaper because he's only really done one book, and it was like $450 they wanted to just do a drawing of me, Jack, and Chaz, and we ended up not doing it because I had a baby,
you know,
and I have a family.
At some point, but yeah, we're still a startup right now.
We're still shopping it around, you know.
We have artist friends that will not charge $450.
We'll yeah, and I've always got some graphic designer peeps.
I get it though, because that's how the artists make their money. Really, I mean, you can't always be working, and in between, you know, they got to make that money to live and survive. So I understand why rates are high.
But yeah, especially if you can make that much drawing for someone, then you definitely should.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't see any reason that they shouldn't ask for the amount of money they do.
Yeah.
It's their life.
It's their profession.
It's their livelihood. Yeah. Yeah. It's,
he was just higher than we expected.
Oh, totally.
No hate against it. I mean, I'm sure he probably gets a lot of commissions done for that price. I saw the artists were talking about Wolverine he drew for someone, and it's a pretty awesome looking Wolverine. So I can only imagine that it'd be cool to have that on the wall. I have yet to get myself a gift commission. That's cool that Chaz got that for his birthday. And where is that hung now? In your living room or in your bedroom?
It's in my bedroom.
In your bedroom?
I like to move it around, though.
You do?
Every nail can become a new place for, like, if I take one down, I just move it to where I put the other one, kind of. So my art is always rotating, so I never get sick of looking at one thing.
Yeah. Anyhow, we are kind of rambled a bit now, but it's good. Jack, I don't know if you have to edit that out. Do you think we're going to lose listeners with your joke?
Maybe.
No, yeah, I don't know. ask Ryan. He's the guest star.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
Ryan, should we edit out Jack's tweaker joke?
Dude, if you want people to like you for who you are, then I say leave it in, man.
One more tweaker joke then. What's the similarity? What's the similarity what's the similarity between Mormon boys and tweakers?
What?
They both ride bikes and go on missions.
Yeah, that was not as bad as the other one.
Yeah.
No, that was much more PG. Yeah. Those are my only two.
Well, first off, Ryan, we all love your book. Thank you so much for coming on and talking with us. I hope you had a good time. We definitely had a good time talking to you.
Yeah, I appreciate, like, you know, all you guys, all the shout outs and all the support you guys do for me and helping me get the word out about my stuff is really nice. And it's really nice just to talk with people about it and that hear like what they think about it and what, you know, how much they like it is really awesome. Cause it's just,
you're welcome. Yeah. We're going to do, probably the next couple weeks, since I'm busy with baby, we're going to do our top 10 of the year, and it's definitely on it. It was one of the best books I read all year. So thank you for writing the story.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah, it's really fun getting to talk about it with you and get like another, you know, get kind of an inside scoop there.
Yeah.
And hopefully maybe we'll get to talk to you again when the second half of the story comes out.
And also just because we've had other writers now that are creators seeing books we're covering that they want to talk about, if you ever want to come on and talk about a comic you like that you see we're going to talk about, you're more than welcome to. If you see something that you're like, I love that book, I want to talk about it with you guys, just shoot me a message and we'll do it.
Cool, man.
Definitely. Yeah. That's what happened with Wickman, is we were going to do a Coffin Bound thing, and he immediately messaged me and said, I need to talk about Coffin Bound with you guys. And I said, all right, I'm down. Let's do it. And so that's awesome. So, I mean, we're definitely down for that. So if you ever see our next...
So anyway, do we want to... do we have anything else to say before we wrap it up?
First off, once again, Ryan, thank you for coming and talking with us. We really love your book.
Yeah, great to meet you, Ryan.
You guys too. I'm really, really glad you guys dig it. And I think you'll like the next... If you like these ones, I think you'll really like the next ones too. They get...
Oh, I'm sure I will.
It gets more intense, I'm for sure.
Really excited about that issue that you described about Brendan's past and it being trippy. Pablo has been doing a great job with those trippy images. I mean, Golden Retriever Leon is an image that will never leave my head.
But the one that sticks with me is the lobster people. Yeah. I loved that. I cracked up when I read that.
Yeah, we really didn't talk about Pablo enough and how much he's just like killing it. He's
crushing it. Yeah, I think he's been doing, ever since he came on, I really think he, not that Rob was doing a bad job, but he really elevated it, especially with the trippy psychedelic moments. He's just making it look great. It sounds Italian, his name. Is he Italian?
He's in Argentina.
Oh, Argentinian. Okay. It reminds me of almost French art, though, if you've ever read French comics. Like, especially when he gets into the trippy areas, which are my favorite parts, which is it issue 6 that's going to be that issue, or am I going to... We're going to wait till issue 7 or 8, that issue you teased that I'm now jonesing to read.
Yeah, it's the opener for the next arc, so yeah.
Oh, awesome. Cannot wait. Once again, we're talking about North Bend, a book we all love here. This is Ryan Ellsworth, the creator and writer of North Bend. The trade will be out January 6th. You should definitely pick it up. You could pre-order it now at your LCS or at scout.com. And Ryan, where can people find you on Twitter?
My Twitter handle is RyanEllsworth_. And yeah, I'm not on social media like a ton, but if you try to get a hold of me on there, I have a pretty high success rate of getting back to people, I think. So
you responded to me pretty quickly. You're a very nice guy. Thank you for coming onto our show and having this chat with us. I'm Poet Air. You can find me on Twitter at PoetAir33. And Jack, where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at Sin_aesthetics with an X, or on Instagram at SinAesthetic.
And
other social media.
And you can find the show at Outside The, but instead of a O, it's a 0. So Outside The with a 0 at Twitter. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and also Amazon Music and Google Play. And please rate, review, and subscribe. And once again, everyone, be good to each other. Love each other. You know, show that inner love you have out to the world and treat each other well. And as Chaz, or who you can find on Twitter at Chaz.Simons, always says, please wash your hands. Please be safe. Thank you so much for being on Outside the Panels, Ryan.
Thank you, guys. I hope you guys have a great day.
Hope you have a great day, too.
Hopefully, we'll get to talk to you again.
Yeah, for sure. We have to. So. All right.
Wash your hands. Pick up the North Bend Volume 1 trade paperback at your LCS or on the Scout Comics website. It releases January 6th of next year, which means 2021 is going to be off to a great start when you get a start with a book as good as North Bend.